Hello, Mr. Kim is here. We're still in topic 5, on page 67. The title of this topic is Evolution and Biodiversity. Page 67, title of the page is Naming and Identifying. Naming of species. Well, first of all, species, living things, plants, animals, it does not matter, bacteria, are giving a scientific name. And this scientific name is a standardized system and is referred to as the binomial system. Binomial means two named, it's a two name system. And there are a couple of rules that apply to this, and this box tries to explain this here a little bit, okay? And I'm just going to use directly examples in the box. Homo sapiens, it's on the bottom of this box, okay? As something that you've already heard, you see that it's written in two names, and the first one, Homo, that is the name of the genus, okay? And a genus is a group of related species. And the scientists basically define which species belong into a genus. Okay, so there are certain criteria that have to be met. You might now wonder, what other species are there in the genus Homo? And well, actually, we're the only ones. Humans are the only ones who are defined to be in that genus. However, there are also extinct human beings who belong to the same genus. For example, Homo erectus. Was the first upright walking, and so on. So that means, but they're extinct. Okay. So concerning the genus name, it must always be written in uppercase first letter. And the second name in the box, it says here the second name is the species name. Strictly speaking, this is not correct. Homo sapiens, both together, are the species name. You cannot say, well, we humans belong to the species sapiens. No, this is wrong, okay? The species name always includes the genus name, the first one as well, okay? In that sense, strictly speaking, the book is not correct. The fourth bullet point here, the species name is given in lowercase first letters. That is correct, okay? And italics are used in a binomially appears in a printed or typed document. So every time when you type out something or you print out something, you must type it out slanted, okay? So the first one example is Homo sapiens that I already talked about. The second one is, well, a little bit difficult to pronounce, Scrofularia Landroveri, which is the name of a plant, which this was discovered by an expedition that traveled in a Land Rover. So they have named the plant according to the car in which they used to discover it, which is nothing uncommon. Very often it is like this, that the names are invented by the scientists also, and are also sometimes named of the other people that you want to honor. So there are, and they should make some kind of a meaning, have a meaning. Homo sapiens, for example, homo means human and sapiens means wise. So I just want to talk about some other things here. What happens if now, let's say there is a third name here. Let's say Homo sapiens neanderthalensis or Homo sapiens. The last one, if there are three of them, three words, and the last one is referred to as the subspecies. However, the subspecies is not a separate species, obviously, but it's like I don't know. You shouldn't use this in biology because it's also not quite. A race would be probably something that you could use in dogs. No, I'll give you another example. Canis lupus familiaris. Canis lupus is the species for the wolf. And also the dog, because the dog and the wolf are actually the same species. And familiaris refers is the subspecies. And if you say Canis lupus familiaris, you're specifically referring to the domesticated dog, okay, the family dog, basically, okay? To distinguish it from the wolf, which is only referred to as Canis lupus, okay? So the third one is always the subspecies. So let's move on now to the next one on page 67 on the right here, identifying species. First of all, if you want to know, if you find an organism and you want to know what type of species is it, what type of organism is it, you can use a so-called dichotomous key. A dichotomous key. And these are, and I'm just going to apply it later, but this key consists of a series of numbered stages, and then you have a choice. You always have a question. Does it have, I don't know, feathers, or does it have a fur? Well, if it's feathers, you go to the birds. If it has fur, then you go into the mammals, okay? So you always have some kind of a distinction here, a choice. And you have alternative characteristics, and then it will lead you to the next step, yeah? So let's apply this here, okay? Using a dichotomous key, which is on the bottom on the bottom left here, and over here what you have is you have four different genera. Genera, by the way, is the plural for genus. Cabomba, Elodia, Ceratophyllum, and so on. And we do now the following. I will simply explain you how the system works. You have all the drawings in this box here, and you can try to apply this. But we started with number one. Okay, it says your simple undivided leaves. If it has simple undivided leaves, then it is the plant is called Elodia. That's a water plant. Okay, if it has leaves forked or divided into segments, you continue with number two. And if you look simply at the drawings down here, 1, 2, 3, you have four different type of leaf drawings, and you see that the third one from the left is a very simple undivided leaf. So that is Elodia, and all the other ones they look like kind of like branched out, right? And so you continue with number two. And if it says your leaves, number two, leaves forked once or twice to form or two or three segments. If this is the case, then it's called Ceratophyllum. Otherwise, if the leaves are divided into more than four segments, you continue with number three. And then jump down to number three. Okay? Three leaves divided up into many flattened segments, it's Cabomba, okay, or leaves divided into filamentous segments, Myriophyllum, okay? So you see, at every stage, you either continue to the next number or you've already identified it, okay? And that's called a dichotomous tree. Dichotomous means that you have a choice of two. Di means two. You either go into one direction or you go into another direction. Yeah? And so that's how you use this. And sometimes in multiple choice questions, they ask you this, okay? Constructing a dichotomous key on the right side, that is a practical activity, and you have over here five different organisms, and then you can distinguish them into, for example, has eight legs or has six legs, okay? Has large wings or has no visible wings, okay? So you can also establish yourself a dichotomous key this way. There are multiple ways on how you can do that, okay? For example, here, I mean, I'm just telling you because I'm, that's why they're telling you over here that the Galeria, the butterfly over here, that is has six legs. You cannot see them, but that's why they tell you this information because it actually belongs to the insects, okay? And those organisms down here, those bugs down here that have eight legs are actually are mites and belong to the spiders, while those that have six legs, they belong to the insects, okay? So as a matter of fact, the ones with six legs are actually much more related to the moth. It's not a butterfly, it's a moth. Than, for example, the others that have eight legs. Okay, so yeah, that's kind of interesting to see here. So, and you can practice this and you can try to make your own dichotomous key. Yeah, so that was page 67. I go now over to page 68. Classification of biodiversity. The term biodiversity refers to all of the living organisms, okay? The diversity of living organisms. And there are a couple of things here that are some general issues that I wanted to explain here in the box on the left side. It's called natural classification, okay? That's the name of the box. The question is very basically, how do I group organisms together? Shall I group them by color? Shall I group them by size? Whether they have eight legs or six legs, or which? Sometimes they're conflicting possibilities, or there are multiple ways how you can classify them or group them together. The question is now, which one is the correct one? Okay, or is there a better one? Or do we simply accept multiple different ones? Okay. So, and the idea is that people who are into the classification of organisms are called taxonomists, and what they want to do is they want to use a so-called a natural classification system. And this means is you try to group them together based on evolutionary relationship. So if they are evolutionarily very related, then you put them into the same group, okay? So this means not color, okay? Just because two animals have the same color does not mean that they're more related. But what you look at is you look at evolutionary relationship even if they do not look very similar. I want to give you an example. Humans and chimpanzees both belong to the primates. Okay, so we are very related, Okay, but chimpanzees have a fur. We humans actually, we also have a, I don't know, we have a few hair maybe on our body, but it's not really something that you call a fur. Okay, but so is this fur really so important now, or is it not important? Well, and a taxonomist said, no, it's not, that is not the main criterion whether we have a dense fur or not. I mean, we do have hair on our head, but forget about it. We're still related to the chimpanzees because we're both primates because of this strong evolutionary relationship. Okay, concerning fur, a chimpanzee might be more related to a cat maybe, yeah, or a dog. Yeah, but that is not the point here, because we are, we go by evolutionary relationship. Now, however, if you say, okay, well, actually, forget about it. I'm more interested in grouping the organisms by color, or bacteria, for example, whether they're pathogenic and cause diseases, or those that don't cause diseases. If you use some kind of a system like this, this is called an artificial classification system. Okay, you make another criterion more important, and then you say, okay, I'm going to group the organisms based on whether they have wings or not. And in that case, birds, butterflies, and bats should belong into the same group because they all have wings and all of them are able to fly, even though they're not related, because a bird is a bird, a butterfly is an insect, and a bat is a mammal. Actually, not related, not very related, yeah? You say, okay, it's fine. Wings are super important. That's my classification system. Then that is called an artificial classification system. And if you go by evolutionary relationship, then you have a natural classification system. That's the one that we want to use. In this case, they're not related. And a bat is more related to a dog or a cat or a dolphin even, though it's swimming in the water, because they're all mammals. Yeah. So the point is, the idea is, why do we want to use a natural classification system? They have a big advantage because it allows us to predict certain things. If we say, okay, we group all of them, bats, dolphins, and humans, into the group of mammals, whether, forget about the wings and forget about living in water or so, they're just mammals and they're in one group, okay, even though they live very differently. This allows us to predict that, well, actually all of them have a lung, because we're all mammals. All of them, bats, dolphins, and humans, we breathe air, right? Because we're all mammals, okay? So that is the thing here. It allows us to predict certain characteristics, okay? Well, if we use an artificial classification system, we cannot predict that. So then the box goes on. It talks about the five kingdoms here. That is a traditional way of classifying organisms, and the five kingdoms are the so-called the animals, the plants, the fungi, the protozoa. These are single-celled eukaryotes, and also the bacteria. Okay, these are the five traditional kingdoms. And that is a little bit artificial, because what we're saying is well, plants and animals, they are separate kingdoms because they're so different. Actually, genetically, they're not. They're all eukaryotes. Okay. So what they've done is the following. In the 1970s, they've done some DNA studies, and they've discovered actually they're not five kingdoms, but they're so-called three domains, and that's the next box. Based on DNA studies, it is like this, that the organisms are classified into three main domains called the archaea, the eubacteria, and eukaryota. What are they? You might want to indicate that archaea and eubacteria are both prokaryotes. They do not have a nucleus. They look like bacteria, but we do not call the archaea bacteria. We call them archaea. Okay, and the eukaryota, these are the eukaryotes with a nucleus, and plants and humans and fungi belong into that group. And the thing is what they discovered based on DNA studies, that is the archaea and the eubacteria, even though they are two prokaryotes, these are both prokaryotes, they're genetically as different as the bacteria are genetically, the eubacteria are genetically different from human beings, for example, eukaryotes. Okay, so there are three very different, so what we see is that there are two very different groups of prokaryotes. Okay, and you can see it in the tree down here. It says here eubacteria such as E. coli, okay, and this archaea including thermophiles and halophiles. These are living in extreme environments like volcanic springs and so on. And then you've got the eukaryotes, where basically we are together with the plants and the fungi. Okay, you see, because we're genetically so much more related. Yeah? The point that I'm trying to make here is that sometimes it doesn't really, that's not really intuitive, because we think, well, actually, humans and plants are quite different, but actually we are not. It depends evolutionary, we're more related than we might actually think. Okay. So next one, page 68 on the bottom, classification from species to domain. Okay. And there's an animal example and a plant example. But the thing that I would like to, I think you should know examples here. Okay. So I'm not just going to read this out to you. But one of the things that is really important, if you don't want to remember the details, the one thing that you definitely should remember is genus, family, order, class, phylum, kingdom, and domain. Okay, what we have over here is the following. We go from at least one, this one, and this. They're missing another one here. Okay, it's kind of interesting. The species is missing. Okay, we start at the bottom. Okay. Let's do the following, from very general to very specific. So we're moving up one. On the very outside, we have domain, okay? Domain, okay? Then kingdom, phylum, class. King Philip came over for ginger snaps. Snaps is are these cookies, okay? And snaps, these stands for the species. So kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. King Philip came over for ginger snaps. Over that, we have the domain, okay? Or you can also say King Philip came over for good spaghetti, or keep pots clean, or family gets sick. That's another way to remember it. Okay. So which one of these groups contains the most organisms? Well, of course, the more general ones. So towards the kingdom and domain, that's where you have the most organisms, because these are really large groups. Okay. And you can see, for example, the animal example over here, the whale belongs to the class Mammalia. It's a mammal. Right? It belongs to the kingdom animals, obviously. It's a eukaryote. Yeah? It's a domain eukaryota. Yeah? So you see how this actually works, and they forgot actually to label the species. I mean, this, yeah. Yeah? So that is, and the species name, of course, contains both the genus and, yeah, both names. Yeah? So that was page 68. And you know what I'm going to do now is I'm simply going to go on here, okay, to two more pages. Page 69, classification of eukaryotes, and now we talk about plants here, recognition of features in plants. There are four types of plants. You must know the names of them, okay? The mosses, ferns, conifers, and flowering plants. And instead of reading out the whole thing here, which you have anyway in the book, I'm just going to tell you a thing that you can, helps you to remember the whole thing. Ask yourself. What is the size of the plant? No, let's start differently. Does the plant have any real true roots, stems, and leaves? That is question number one. Okay? And the mosses do not have that. The mosses don't have any true stems, roots, and leaves. That's the question. Structure, and how do they reproduce? Do they reproduce? Do they make spores, or do they produce seeds, or how do they reproduce? Okay, so these are the two things. And if you just remember these things and just imagine how a moss looks like, a moss is very small. It doesn't really look like it's having really real roots and leaves and stems. Okay, so it must be quite small, and it does not have any vascular tissue. What does this mean? There are no vessels that transport the water, of course not, because if there are no roots, then where do you want to transport it to? Yeah, so it takes up, absorbs the water over its body surface. Then the ferns do have roots, leaves, and non-woody stems. The ferns always, they don't have woody stems. And the leaves are curled up, okay? And the leaves are pinnate. Pinnate looks means that the leaves look like feathers. And they have roots, so they must have vascular tissue, okay? And if you turn a fern around on it and look at the bottom side, then you're going to see these small dots on the bottom side of the leaf. These are called sporangia, and they produce spores. Next ones, conifers are the Christmas trees. Coniferophytes, okay? And are they made of wood? Do they have wood? Yes, okay? Do they have Christmas trees or pine trees and so on? Do they have roots? Yeah, they have roots. They have leaves. These are the needles. And they have vascular tissue to transport the whole thing, yeah? Be careful if some people confuse this with the ferns, because in the ferns it looks pinnate and they think, ferns have leaves that look like pins. No, this is not correct, okay? Pinnate does not refer to pins. Pinnate means it looks like feathers. And then you have the flowering plants, okay? They have roots, they have leaves, and the stems can be woody as well, so they must have vascular tissue to transport the water, and they form fruits and seeds which form inside ovules, okay? And the fruits develop from the ovaries, So these are the four different types of plants, okay, that you should know. And you can distinguish them basically on their structure. Do they have roots, leaves, and stem? Do they have vascular tissue? If they have roots and leaves, then they of course must also have vascular tissue. Then you can ask yourself, is the stem woody? Conifers and flowering plants have woody stems, the others don't. Okay, and how do they reproduce? Okay. So next box, recognition features of animals. Here I'm also not going to go into all too much detail, but rather giving you an overview. Ask yourself, is there are three types of symmetry? No symmetry, so porifera, these are the sponges, do not have a symmetry. Cnidarians, these are the jellyfish and the sea anemones, they have a radial symmetry, they look round. Okay, and you can you can turn it and it always looks the same. Or you have a so-called bilateral symmetry, that means they have a left and a right side. Yeah. So these are the three types of symmetry, and that is one way how you can already sort this out, okay? And the next thing, ask yourself is it able to move around or not, okay? The porifera, they are sessile, this means they grow on the ground, okay? Next question, ask yourself, is the organism segmented? Are there any segments, okay? That is the thing. Next question is what about the digestive system? So example, the flatworms, the platyhelminths over here. You see that on the bottom side, you see this little, in the drawing, you see this little tube there. That is basically also the mouth, okay? So that is how it feeds. Yeah? So does it have a mouth? Does it have an anus where the food goes out? How does this look like? Okay, and that could also be a distinguishing characteristic. My advice is the following. You do not simply try to memorize this here because that's too difficult, but simply get yourself a picture. Look, Google some pictures, type it in, and then it's much easier for you to remember because you don't have to specifically remember, well, a porifera, a sponge, is it bilaterally symmetrical or not? No, it simply grows more or less irregularly, okay? So it does not have this bilateral symmetry. Yeah? So that's my advice here, is to read through the whole thing, but actually to get yourself a picture, the whole, and then you simply associate the name with the picture of the organism. Okay, associate yourself the name with, and then it's easy for you to to solve the whole thing. Okay, so next thing are the vertebrates, recognition features of vertebrates. And the thing is that in the box, the vertebrates seem to be not missing the chordates. You have the chordata, okay, it's a fish, but the vertebrates, this is basically where we belong to, are such a big group that we also have to talk about that, okay. So you have the bony ray-finned fish, you have the amphibians, the reptiles, birds, and mammals. And my advice here is look a little bit at the look at pictures of this and try to think of how a bird looks like. Okay, and then you automatically know that a bird has feathers. You also know that a bird must have a lung. You must know that a bird, believe it or not, has wings. Okay, instead of front legs. Really, no kidding. Okay. You have to know that birds lay eggs, okay, and mammals don't. You see what I mean? You just try to picture the whole thing, you try to memorize the characteristics, not by simply memorizing the list. Of course, you read through the list, but by trying to associate the picture of the organism with its characteristics. Amphibians, for example, also lay eggs, but these eggs are soft-shelled, okay, yeah? Not soft, they don't even have a shell. Gee, I was talking about reptiles. The reptiles have soft-shelled eggs, and amphibians, for example, like frogs, they also lay eggs, and you will see that the frog eggs, they have a gel around it, okay? So amphibians, reptiles, and birds lay eggs, okay? So that is, I think mammals don't. Yeah? So that is the thing here, a little bit, a picture. Get a picture and associate the name of the organism with the picture. Last one, cladistics. That's a pretty important topic here, okay? And it's more a practical application here. The idea is the following. We are able to determine, using DNA studies and so on, evolutionary relationship between currently living organisms. In other words, the more similar the DNA is, or let's say certain proteins are, okay, to each other. Like, for example, the protein of a human compared, hemoglobin protein of a human compared to the hemoglobin protein of a chimpanzee to a dog, and so on. Okay, and what I can do is I can compare now the either the DNA sequence of the or I can compare the in the case of a protein, I can compare the amino acid sequence, and by comparing these sequences, I'm able to group organisms together. And a group that is established like this is called a clade. Okay, a clade is a group of organisms that evolved from a common ancestor. We talk about natural classification here, right? We want to talk about the evolutionary relationship. And we know that they evolved from a common ancestor because of their similarity in their DNA. Okay, and then if we analyze the similarity of the DNA, then we can draw so-called cladograms. These are diagrams that show this evolutionary relationship, and the study on how to do this is called cladistics. Okay, so this already covers the top two boxes, clades, and cladograms. And then there is the next box, cladistics and human classification. And if you simply look over here at this diagram, you see at the top it says European, Japanese, African, common chimpanzee, pygmy chimpanzee, gorilla, orangutan. You see all of us, we are all somehow related. We are all primates, obviously. But what you can do is that you can look, if you just look at the European, Japanese, African over here, you can also see the relationship here is that the European, according to cladistics, is more related to the Japanese than the group of Europeans, Japanese are related to Africans. Okay, because they branch off at different places. Okay, and how to make this diagram, that is basically something that you should be able to do. Okay, using DNA sequences, and on page 71 in the question section on question 9, it gives you such an assignment. Okay, on how to make using DNA data on how to make such a diagram. Okay, now what is the problem? And that's a reclassification of figwarts in this case. It's a plant. Is that in the past, people have classified and grouped organisms together by their similarity, and then they did their DNA studies and discovered, well, actually, they are not so related anymore. And they had to reclassify them. So basically, they had to correct some of the classifications that they did in the past. Okay, and that is something that is quite common in taxonomy. Okay, that you come up with and you didn't have the full data yet, you grouped them together, and then you discovered actually I put them together because their leaves were kind of similar and the way that they reproduce are similar, but actually they are not really evolutionarily so related. And then you have to reclassify them, then sometimes you also have to rename them. And in taxonomy, this can sometimes cause a little bit of a confusion because you end up renaming organisms all the time. Okay. So the next box down here, analysis of cladograms to deduce evolutionary relationships. This is a little bit like the cladogram at the top, okay? And what you can do over here is we go down all the way, it says here in the list, elephant and human. And then there's a time scale millions of years ago. And it goes, I don't know, about 70 million years ago, elephants and humans separated, okay? We're still both mammals, okay? But still, this was around, I don't know, 70, 80 million years ago. And how do we know that? Well, what we do is we simply compare the DNA similarity between current living elephants and humans. And then for every difference, every percent difference, we have a time value, because there's certain statistical values, how much the DNA changes over the over the millions of years. Okay, so you can see that the elephant and humans, they are much more related than, for example, a human is related to the, I don't know, the lungfish. The very top here, right? It separated around 400 million years ago, and the hemoglobin, that's the stuff in the red blood cells, wow, is what, over 60% different. The humans and elephants have around a 20% difference in hemoglobin. Okay, so you see, the more different the further back in time the organisms diverged and separated. Yeah. So that is how you make, and you got to be able, using some data, you got to make be able to draw something like this, because you calculate the difference in the DNA similarity. I'm just going to jump over to page 71 on number 9, question number 9. It says here, the figure below shows a base sequence of part of hemoglobin with four species of a mammal. And then they ask you, how many differences are there between humans and orangutans? That's A and Roman numeral I. So you go for the human and orangutan, and you go through here, and you will determine the number of differences. So the first T and T, that's the same. A human has a G, the orangutan a C. That's one difference. Then AA, that's fine. CC is fine. AG, that's the second difference. AA, GG. So I'm seeing, how many differences do I see between humans and orangutans? I see two differences. So you write down human and orangutan, two differences. Okay? And you could probably, and that's basically, so there's humans and orangutans separate basically very recently. So there where you link it together is not that far back in time. Okay? So you can do that. You can, by a little bit of trial and error, you can go through the whole thing and you can try to draw a cladogram. And the idea again is we look at currently existing organisms, and this allows us to take a look back into time when these organisms separated. It's kind of cool because we don't need fossils. We just look at currently living organisms. We look at their DNA, and by comparing the DNA of currently living organisms, we can calculate back how many years ago they separated. And the more different the DNA is, the longer time ago these branches diverged and they separated, okay, evolutionarily. So that is kind of cool. That's kind of interesting. Let me see over here. Let's have a look at number six. Because the first one, that's a snail. What does it belong to? A snail. Looks like a snail. A snail is kind of soft. It's a mollusk. Okay, so you can go back and you can see that, you look at the snails and it's a mollusca. What about B, these little things that are swimming around in water? These are jellyfish. The jellyfish are cnidarians, and this belongs to the sea animals. Okay, and you see they're kind of round if you look at them from the top. C is a fish. Well, it belongs to the chordata because it has a spinal cord. Okay. The next one, D, well, these are corals, okay, it looks like corals. They are also belong to the cnidarians. They are radially symmetrical, they have tentacles, you can see. E, that is a crab, okay, and these crabs, they belong to the arthropods, and you can see that they have a hard outer shell, okay, an exoskeleton. I shouldn't say shell, because shells actually mean something different, okay? Shells are made of usually of calcium carbonate, but they have this so-called an exoskeleton made of chitin. And chitin is. So these organisms, looks like a lobster, okay? Have also joint appendages. This means they have they're hard on the outside and soft on the inside, and they're that's why they are segmented. And F, that's a worm, okay? That's an annelid, okay? And it says here it's segmented, yeah? And you can also see the little rings that you have here, okay? So that is simply something I just wanted to, that's why I'm trying to tell you. Look at the pictures and try to deduce what they are, not by memorizing long lists, but by actually trying to, you should have a look at the list. Maybe it does help you, otherwise you're going to forget. But I would say it's much easier to simply imagine the animal that you're talking about. Okay, so this was it. I wish you a nice day. All the best. Bye.